Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I'm going to take the Bears. I'm going to say that the Bears win the game. Their weaponry may be as good this week as it's been this season.
The Bears have an opportunity here because they're playing against the worst pass defense in the NFL. Meanwhile, Caleb Williams will thrive.
Thanks to Allen. Thanks to Swift. And there's Komet. Cole Komet. Touchdown. To Williams' left. Let's throw into the end zone. There's Komet. Doing it all here in London. Williams over the middle. Keenan Allen. Touchdown. Chicago Bears second and goal. DeAndre Swift doesn't get it. Instead, it's a touchdown to Keenan Allen. Two for Komet, two for Keenan, four for Caleb. As time is running out, Bears are going to go to 4-2.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Happy Bears Monday.
Bears.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, it was a jolly good time in London. I don't think there's anybody that would argue that fact, Mr. David. The Bears not only win, the Bears dominate, and the Bears looked awful good. And they got a lot of big performances from a lot of very good football players.
Starting with quarterback. Good morning, Mully. Happy Monday. And we'll talk about it all week. We have the bye week to bask in the Bears' latest victory. They entered the bye week 4-2. We have ourselves a season. That's what yesterday confirmed.
Yeah,
definitely. You come into the year, expectations were enormous, the hype was real, and then they fizzled a little bit. You have the season opener, but you have a couple games where you start to question everything you thought you knew about the Bears. You start to wonder if all of the hype was definitely justified or not. What yesterday did was justify a lot of the hype going in. 4-2 in this division, 4-2 against the soft portion of your schedule is exactly where you needed to be, and I think where most people thought the Bears could be if things went well. And yesterday, Caleb Williams took command and took another step forward.
Yeah, little doubt about that. I mean, it's, you know, you wanna find some sort of weird Bears record or rookie record in the NFL. It came to a point where I'm following Twitter and I'm just laughing out loud because there's so many weird since 1956. It was back in 1942 where all of these kind of weird Bears / Caleb Williams records are coming from. I mean, gosh, it's been a long time since the Bears have had a quarterback develop over the course of a season. And you saw a player yesterday with four touchdowns, could have had five. You know, I'll stop myself.
Could have had five.
Could have had six.
Probably so.
Probably could have had a touchdown if he had done what Kurt Warner said, thrown for the pylon when DJ Moore was clear. But, man, it was fun.
So many stats that they even seem a little made up, like this one.
Yes, that's right.
Caleb Williams is the first player in NFL history with at least three passing TDs and 50 rushing yards in an international game.
That's insane.
He is the international man of mastery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were so many things like that, so many oddities. We should put together a list of them. Maybe we'll do that a little bit later in the program and just read you some
the
of
two
these
big
things.
Picture ones that do make sense and do kind of speak to what we're talking about offensively, all of the scrutiny, and Shane Waldron, and we'll get into all of that stuff later and throughout the show in week. But back-to-back 30-point outputs for the first time since 2013.
Yep.
And as you referenced, this is the first time the Bears have scored five offensive touchdowns in consecutive weeks for the first time since 1956.
You know what I love about that one? They've scored five touchdowns during that period, but they've had a pick six, or Devin Hester has had a return, or whatever it might be.
Defense, special teams, the formula.
This was the offense.
See, I think that's what makes this a little bit different than past Bears seasons that we're anticipating, or past Bears, just the tradition. This is what's different about this team. We just talked about it. It's Caleb Williams. We have talked about Bears teams before that might have playoff aspirations or look legitimate six games in. It's because of their defense. It's because of the special teams. And certainly this defense looks special. It's holding teams out of the end zone. Scoring defense is as good as it has been since 2006. But we're used to seeing that.
Yes.
We've seen it before. We've seen good special teams before. Return guys in field position battles and winning the hidden yardage game. What we haven't seen is a quarterback capable of taking over the way that Caleb Williams can take over.
Yeah, I think that his improvement continued before everyone's eyes, and I think it's fun. I had heard that we know we played the cuts. DJ Moore called him bossy, and then he said, "Does he mean sassy?" And it was funny, but the whole thing. But apparently, Caleb was in the room when DJ Moore was calling him bossy. So we'll talk to DJ hopefully this morning about that. DJ,
it was more razzing than it was anything.
Yeah, it was like two teammates having fun.
Which is a good sign.
But it's also, it speaks to the leadership. And it speaks to the fact that Caleb Williams is stepping into a role. He's becoming more comfortable, let's say, in a role as a leader of the football team.
It also speaks to the comfort level that one has with the other, that you can see him in the room and try to poke some fun at him in a good-natured way that teammates communicate. And you don't do that if there's an awkwardness. You don't do that if there's kind of a problem with communication.
You need that fact to feel really good about it, right? You need that fact to feel like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's just two guys kind of going out.
Yeah.
Add a little bit. DJ is scheduled to be on at 8 o'clock this morning. He's such a good dude, and he has confirmed that he will be on. I just wonder if he'll be on.
I mean, I do too.
They left after the game.
What time did they get back, do you think?
Let's just do some quick math. So
they probably got wheels up at what? 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
Well, but that's not London time. It's like 9 o'clock. You're saying so?
No, but I'm talking about local time.
Local time.
Because the game was over at noon. Wheels up at 3.
Okay, so
then they got home about 10 o'clock last night.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so
maybe
conceivably he will be up and on the phone. Hopefully he'll be able to
I want to know how good that flight was.
I want to know how good the week was because they stayed at a place that was a very idyllic countryside setting. And Matt Eberflus referred to it as training camp. And you can see why there would be some bonding opportunities when you're in the middle of a countryside. You're not in the heart of London.
Well, thank God.
Yes,
because there are plenty of players that the horse has gotten out of the barn, shall we say. It is not very difficult to kind of get on a tear a little bit if you know where you're going. The license is an early one, but there are a lot of clubs that are open all night long, so you just got to know where to go.
Yeah, and they didn't have that problem or those distractions.
Exactly.
And they definitely used it as an opportunity to create one and build on what I think they believe is one of their strengths, and that's the camaraderie, that's the leadership, and that's the chemistry of this football team, which I think is pretty real. It's not invented. It doesn't seem inauthentic. It doesn't seem forced. This is a bunch of guys that are of high football character, and you see that playing itself out week in and week out. And that's, I think, why, in retrospect, at the bye week, as you kind of take stock, you look back. I don't know that there's any – I struggle with the term good loss sometimes.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they would have made the changes to their offense, and I wonder if they would be as far along as they are offensively had they not struggled and lost that game in Indy. That could be, in retrospect, they woke up.
It's fair to say that was a turning
point. They woke up.
And they came to play since then. Again, I got to be careful because they're not playing – the greatest football teams ever assembled.
No, they're not.
So we got to be careful about it. And we are taking that into account, believe me. But there is no denying the fact that this team has gotten better. Their quarterback's getting better. Confidence is growing, which is all you need in a football season to become a very dangerous team. He's getting better. He's growing. Their team around him, They are reacting well to each other. They do have the weaponry that we've talked about. It was on display in London for certain. And I think that that this has the potential to improve. I think the bye's coming at the right time because of the number of injuries. The secondary's really beaten up. Lost another player to a hamstring, Kyler Gordon. Lost your long snapper. That's a big deal to see Cole Kmet not only have like a great day where he catches a couple touchdowns, he's also snapping on all the extra points and the field goals. Did you notice they did not attempt a punt after the
they did not
Scott
punt after
Daly
the injury.
Yeah, he hurt his knee.
Torrey Taylor punted twice with an average of 61.5 yards. He was booming, but they didn't have to force Cole Kmet into a position where he had to snap on punts. He did a nice job on extra points. Apparently, a couple high snaps, according to Eberflus.
According to Pat, but, did you see Pat Manley went online, and it was pretty funny.
It's one of those things, though, where he comes through in the clutch because he had to. You look in the secondary, Josh Blackwell, Jalen Jones, they have big games because they had to. This is a team that's depth has been tested because of injuries. They get a week off to recover.
Yep.
You wonder if Tyrique Stevenson or Brisker or Kyler Gordon, are those long-term or extended injuries where they're going to miss time? I don't know.
You know, I'm just talking with Patrick and Nolan yesterday. That is a lifetime. 2 weeks is a lot of time in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of treatments and a lot of I would be surprised. You're absolutely right. If you got a hamstring, if it's bad, there's no way you're coming back in 2 weeks. But I really do believe that there are thousands of things that the league can do, that people can do to help rehab.
You just don't want it to linger.
No, you don't want it to linger.
And with the concussion, it's very difficult to know.
That's a bad one.
You don't know if that is something you can just pencil him in or not.
Yeah.
Every concussion person recovers at their own pace, which makes tonight's Monday Night Football game interesting with Josh Allen, but we'll get to that later. With the Bears, they feel like they could use this off week. It comes at a really opportune time for people to get healthy and also for them to recalibrate and for Caleb Williams to reset. Now, are we going to see the version of him the rest of the season that we've seen the last three games? Because if so, that's what makes people so excited. Or is he going to take a turn and maybe a half step back at times because he still is a rookie and he's going to be, you know, you're going to be susceptible to those kind of setbacks.
Yeah, you always figure there's a clunker out there somewhere when you're talking about a young player, but we haven't seen it yet. I don't think we've really seen a clunker. So I don't know. He now has 9 touchdowns on the year to 5 interceptions. That's pretty good touchdown to interception ratio. 4 more touchdowns yesterday, the 1 interception.
It's the presence of mind, too.
I mean,
it's the presence of mind. It's the eyes. How about when they broke down the eyes?
Oh, that
phenomenal?
Yeah.
You could follow his eyes.
Kurt Warner apparently fell in love with Brenda looking at her.
Yeah.
That was so awesome.
Wasn't that funny?
I love that.
Yeah. Those guys did a nice job.
They did a great job. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot.
Rich Eisen with Kurt Warner. There's no I in Kmet.
Yeah, that was hysterical, too. It was good. I mean, it was a great day. It was great to see Stacey Dales. She did a great job. She brought the stuff we talked about on Friday, which kind of haunted me, the no first 15. She brought that to the game. They talked about it. It's fascinating to me. When Olin was on, and we'll talk to Olin at 7, when we did the pregame show on Saturday, Olin was on and said that he had a real hard time believing that. He just did not.
Right.
And he talked about how you would get the first 15 and you would go over it and he would watch tape with it. And before the game, he would have a conversation again about what he was seeing. And then when you got in game, hey, they're not doing that. They're doing this. They've reacted like this. So there's a ton of information. And for somebody that is going to school on that information, it's just invaluable. So, he honestly didn't believe that was possible.
Well, I think that something might be lost in the translation.
Yes.
Thinking, following up and talking to a couple people who were familiar with what was going on, the specific first 15 wasn't being offered the way it is on some teams.
Yeah.
But they were kind of referred to – or they were referred to as openers, plays that were openers, concepts, and a variety of plays or a package of plays that could be used. And what the players did was said, okay, Mercedes Lewis was at the lead of this, and maybe Caleb Williams was part of it as well, was maybe we need to be more specific so we can be mentally more prepared.
Yeah.
Could you streamline this? Could you make it more specific? And at that point, they weren't 15 specific plays the way it's scripted,
yeah,
but they were 15 or 10 to 20 concepts about plays that could be used under certain categories or an umbrella.
Yeah, and it tracked a little bit because that's exactly when he started wearing the armband, the left arm, with plays on it so he could look and see that information in front of him.
Right, and what changed was when they had that sort of intervention, if you will,
yes,
after the Colts game, I think Waldron adjusted and adapted and said, okay, we'll go to the 15 if it helps people prepare better and you think it's a give it better plan. So I think that's one facet of what changed.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. Here's the other thing I think what is part of that as well, and maybe even it's the opposite end of the spectrum. When they go no huddle,
yeah,
it seems to unlock something within Caleb Williams.
He's great moving faster, isn't he?
He is, and he's almost like it's when it is in his command or he has the autonomy to make some calls at the line of scrimmage or to keep things going at his rate and pace. It seemed like that's when yesterday the Bears offense started to get going.
Well, sure didn't get going in the first two.
That was a bad script.
I got to tell you.
Junk that script.
I'm sitting there and I am like watching the beginning of this game. They had a penalty. They had a penalty before the ball was actually kicked off.
I know.
I mean, how do you have a dead ball penalty before you even got started?
They should not let them. They shouldn't let them kick off in that situation, right? They should call it dead if they're lined up wrong.
I would think so, but how would they line up wrong? It was like you're one play in and you lost, what was it, 5 yards on that play.
Well, the dynamic kickoff now, yes. you can't move until the kicker
apparently
strikes. And then I think maybe somebody either moved early or there was off the line of scrimmage.
It was so
very bizarre.
It just peeved me to have, and they ended up for the, and I thought, like, oh God, like Dave picked against them, you know.
You were questioning your pick.
I was questioning my pick after the 2-3 and outs. But you're right. They got pace going, and that was the end of it.
Well, Trevor Lawrence also moved the Jags down the field pretty well in the first series.
So they're down 3 points. They haven't gotten a first down yet. And I'm sitting there in the first, like, whatever, 6 or 7 plays didn't seem scripted too well. And I'm sitting there like, this could be a long day. And then it ended up being one of those, maybe as fun a game as I've watched in a really long time.
The final three quarters were definitely as fun as you've seen the Bears have in a long time.
Yep.
Maybe the best they have been this season. Also, it reminded you just how bad the Jaguars are.
Yeah, that's there.
And they have now post-game accusations by players saying they quit. You don't want to hear the Q word in any locker room.
Wow, that was something. And that was from the guy that made the interception.
Cisco?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he also...
He was a friend of mine, but I don't know now.
He was a veteran who spoke up after the game. Doug Peterson talked about not seeing any of that. You wonder how long he will be there in Jacksonville. You know, at least for one more week, because they have a home game. They're not coming home. They didn't have a long flight. So they're in London, probably getting into trouble this week. They have another. It's a home game for them, and it will be at Wembley, correct? And they'll be
– Yeah.
It'll be their field.
That's their home game.
They can't leave if they want to leave.
No.
But Trevor Lawrence – showed his limitations. I feel like that receiving core dropped some passes they should have had, and that they reminded everybody why they're 1-5.
Shad Khan talked to some reporters Saturday in London and told them that he still had faith in the coach and he still believed in what he was trying to get done, and that he had no plans on making a move. Now, that's before the game, right?
Yeah.
So
the dreaded vote of confidence.
That is a little bit.
You wonder, and
especially if you lose again. I don't think they're going to fire him this week in London. I don't know how that would work.
I doubt that they would do that. But you don't want to make a change. But they feel like When they get back, perhaps they will go in a different direction. Who knows? Depending on the relationship between Shad Khan and Doug Peterson, that's their problem. The Bears took care of business because they had to. You couldn't lose that game and have any kind of expectation or legitimacy coming back to the States, and now they do. I think 4-2 gives you credibility.
Oh, yeah.
It confirms things you thought that you knew about Caleb Williams, and here you go. The rest of the division, boy, you are in the best division in football right now.
Oh,
you are in a division that the NFC North is historically good this year.
Yep. No, they're excellent. And if the season were to end today, the Bears would be the team out of the playoffs because the Packers would get through based on the strength of the opposing schedule.
Wow.
Is that unbelievable?
It is unbelievable. The NFC North is the first division since realignment in 2002 with all four teams each having at least four wins through 6 weeks.
It's pretty wild.
Everybody's got at least four.
Yeah. Yeah.
So great weekend, great Bears talk, great week ahead because they're off, and now you can talk about things like playoff legitimacy, progress, and it won't be like, you're making people roll their eyes. It's real.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
It's real.
There's a lot going on in sports and a lot going on in town, and we'll touch on all of it, but let's be honest about it. Like as great a story as Ruth Chepnogetich breaking the women's mark, the first woman ever to run under 2 hours and 10 minutes in a marathon. That now the owners of the Chicago Marathon, the winners of the Chicago Marathon over the last 2 years now own the marathon world record.
Both set here.
Both set in Chicago.
That's amazing history.
Pretty cool.
It is very cool. It was a big day. Great day for running in Chicago for the marathon. Great turnout again. Kerry Pinkowski did a terrific job. And
always does.
Local friend of the show, Carl Allegretti, completed his 70th marathon yesterday.
That's insane.
And the video of him crossing the finish line is epic. And he did it. He persevered. Not only that, Mully, but he persevered. And as importantly, I don't want to say more importantly because easy for me to say, he finished his 70th marathon. Raised $200,000, and
wow.
He raised a record $200,000 for charity. That's what they announced as he crossed the finish line. It was a cool moment for Carl Allegretti.
Great
good
guy.
For him. Congratulations.
Yeah. Congratulations to him. And honestly, guys, I mean, congratulations to everyone that completed a marathon or attempted to. Even
yeah,
if,
right.
I mean, that is an unbelievable
it's great
thing.
Accomplishment.
And the buzz in the city, Michigan Avenue, the kind of feeling everyone had about it was fantastic. So congratulations to all. But it's a Bears Monday. This is the day. You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bake. And we're going to be right back with the Pick 6. We'll talk about it. Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
How complete was the Bears' tea party from London? A 35-16 blowout of the Jaguars. Was that the Keenan Allen game, the Cole Kmet game? Don't forget, he doubled up as the emergency long snapper. Or the Caleb Williams game? How would you choose to define the best victory of the season?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above. I mean, it's probably the Caleb Williams game when you really get down to it because he threw 4 touchdowns. Cole Kmet was sensational. It was very interesting to me. A couple of points. One, the play to Kmet down the middle of the field was an incredibly well-designed play. That was a great play where the quarterback gets the ball. He fakes a screen. No, he's going the other way. And while everybody's kind of recovering from that, boom, right down the middle of the field. I mean, the guy's wide open. Then he takes a hit and drags the would-be tackler into the end zone. It's just a great play by Cole Kmet. And he gets 2 touchdowns, and he's also long snapping. So he can't celebrate one of the touchdowns because, hey, you got to snap the ball for the, for the extra point, which I thought was really funny. It was just kind of amazing. And I thought, I guess it was a little bit high on a couple of the snaps, but I thought, from the untrained eye, I thought looked pretty good. He looked like he could do it. I just thought to myself, guy played baseball at Notre Dame, is a hell of an athlete. He can do stuff like this.
Oh, yeah.
And clearly he does some practice on it. He says he does it a few times every Thursday.
Twice a Thursday.
The other thing, and I'll finish quickly, is just that they talked about getting the ball to Keenan Allen. They said on the broadcast that the quarterback told them he was going to get the ball to Keenan Allen, and sure enough, threw a couple touchdowns to him, the first of which he did like this. I thought for sure the second foot was out when I saw it, and then they showed it. The guy, he's just a master, Keenan Allen. It was great to see him get involved.
It was the Keenan Allen game. I don't think there's a bad answer. These are all great answers, but it was the Keenan Allen game. I mean, we talked about how important he could be not only to Caleb Williams, but to that room, the wide receiver room, if you will, helping develop that. And he's obviously healthy right now, so now he goes into the bye, gets to have this feel-good afternoon, morning, however you want to describe it, in London, and I think that's going to carry. He could really be the difference in this team being okay and good.
I think Cole Kmet deserves credit for being versatile. I love the fact that he learned how to long snap because his uncle and his dad told him that's the way you make teams. You make yourself indispensable. You give them something else you can do. Keenan Allen, yes and no. I mean, the numbers aren't great. He was definitely what you thought he could be. He was a guy that's going to make a clutch catch. He caught 5 passes, 41 yards, and 2 touchdowns, and they were very nice catches, and they were very beautiful throws. And to me, that's why this is the Caleb Williams game. This is the game where he threw 4 touchdowns, made a little history along the way, and it was treated in London like a coronation. And in Chicago, it was more confirmation. It was, this is the guy who makes this team different. This is the guy who makes this typically put together Bears team of defense and special teams. You make you feel like you got a little bit more ambition, a little higher aspirations because you have a special quarterback. We saw the special. That arm talent is obvious. We also saw him do things he hadn't really done so much of, and that's tuck it and run. He had over 50 yards running. He has a presence of mind. He has command. This is the Caleb Williams game because this is the Caleb Williams season. And it continues at 4-2 with the bye week, feeling like the Bears can contend in the NFL's toughest division. And yesterday underscored that.
These are the questions I cannot answer, right?
There will be questions for Olin, 7 a.m. Is it difficult to keep the Bears season in perspective, given they are 4-2, looking competitive in the best division in football? Do you temper your enthusiasm since the team's opponents thus far are 10-20? Is it better going into a bye week knowing the team is improving and building momentum regardless of the opponents? Do you feel better knowing we've acknowledged that fact and can go back to enjoying a victory Monday?
Well, they're good questions and they're pertinent ones because you do want to check yourself if you're prone to doing such things. But I have to say this. If you want to get carried away in Chicago about a 4-2 start by the Bears, by all means, get carried away.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team and a franchise that has not won a playoff game in 14 years come January. That's way too long. The wait has been far too long and arduous and painful and dysfunctional and everything. Right now, you have a team that looks like they know what they're doing. Dare I say they even look like they're well coached more times than not. You have a special quarterback that you've never had, a defense that refuses to break, but it'll bend, but it still is an elite defense, keeping people out of the end zone. You have to keep in mind the second half of your schedule is much different than the first. You have taken care of business, but there have been past teams not that long ago that could not take care of this business against a teams whether they're 10-20 or 0-30. This is a Bears team that has done what is necessary to keep that kind of hope alive this season. They are in the best division in football. The NFC North is not messing around, and the Bears are keeping pace. So if you want to exaggerate what that means, go ahead. I don't think the Bears can allow themselves to do that. Let's hope they know how to handle success. We know they can handle adversity. They tell us how much they can, and we have seen them do it. That's what they're good at, creating crisis and then handling them and then taking credit for it. This year, they have a little success. Let's see how they handle it. If they can handle success, it's going to be a fun season.
Well, I think the key to this 4-2 is that each and every week, Caleb Williams gets better. That's what's important. And, Mully, as you pointed out in the first segment of the show, this bye comes at a great time because they can get healthy. They go into it with the win. I think that's extremely, extremely important going in. And you feel good. Got people involved. Running game was okay. Offense this morning, we're not in here destroying the offensive line. Despite they won, the offensive line still stinks. Offensive line thought overall played pretty good yesterday. So there's a lot of positives here. Lots and lots of positives.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I think that, you know, I feel better that we've acknowledged, yeah, they're not playing the best teams in the league. Now we can go back to having our fun. I really do believe it's important to keep in perspective the season that they're having vis-a-vis the season that the teams in their division are having. And when you finally get to the point where you're playing those teams, we'll find out if this growth, both in understanding and feel for the game and in confidence, is going to lead to better things moving forward. You can only play the teams in front of you. You can only handle your business against who you are scheduled to play. And they've done that now. Getting to 4-2 is really nice to see because they should be 4-2. You know, I thought when I was looking at the season, I think I had them at 4-2. I thought the Rams would beat them, and I thought they'd beat Indy. And the way it turned out, it obviously is a different way around. And maybe, as you said earlier, David, the Indy loss has helped them to put together their three-game winning streak. It is not a modest three-game winning streak. You beat three teams in the NFL. Hey, they're getting paid. They got professional players, professional coaches. They are professionals. And, you know, you can misstep and easily lose games that you're supposed to win, that you're favored in. It's just really good to see the Bears get to a point in the season where now that you get a little pause, now you get to kind of enjoy what you've accomplished. You're on the right track, and you got to keep it going. And let's hope the coaches go to work and work hard to try to figure out some of the foibles and problems with this team. And they exist, unquestionably, but there are a lot of good things, and you should feel good about where they're at right now.
Coming out hot with the hot question, but
DJ Moore, hopefully we're talking to him at 8 o'clock. We've already talked about the Bears injury concerns. Kyler Gordon's got a hamstring. Scott Daly's got a knee. Is the bigger news the healthy and active of Nate Davis, Velus Jones, Monique Robinson, all making the inactive list? Does it feel like the end of the road for Davis? Will he finish the season with the team, given that Ryan Bates and Larry Borum are both set to return? Do you consider his $10 million price tag a sunken cost at this point?
That's all it is, unfortunately. That is the reality of the situation. That, you know, they signed to a three-year, $30 million deal. The guaranteed money ends this year. They do not have to pick up the final year of $10 million. It doesn't seem like they're inclined to do so. This feels like, you know, 1 foot in the grave, 1 foot on a banana peel in terms of this guy's Bears career. You're looking at a situation where they've done everything they can think of, clearly. They went so far as to call the guy out at the podium, not once, but a couple times. And I don't know, that was like a last gasp type thing. This just indicates that he's heading out the door because, you know, Ryan Bates is coming back. Larry Borum is going to be available. They are going to have hard decisions. And then you say to yourself, is it really that hard? Is it a difficult decision? When a guy is a healthy scratch, that means they're done with him. That means he's gone. I can't imagine anything else happening. And if they need a roster spot, I would say that, you know, unfortunately, Velus Jones has not been given another opportunity. They gave him every chance and unfortunately fumbled, and we have not seen him since. Dominique Robinson's an interesting case because they drafted him. He's a converted player and a great athlete. You thought his body shape looked like he had done some pretty good work, but there just hasn't been an opportunity. And now they got another defensive end who's ready to come in. And by the way, congratulations to the Bears because they moved some people up off the practice squad and put them on the roster, and they contributed. They got some sacks out of a couple of guys that you wouldn't have thought they were going to get sacks out of. So I think they did a pretty good job, that some of the secondary members, et cetera. You just worry when people don't, when they're scratched all year, that means they're not part of the plan.
Yeah, I mean, Nate Davis not being active yesterday. Tevin Jenkins, we never know how he's going to get through a game. Kudos for him for getting out there. And I thought he looked pretty good. I haven't watched the game a second time yet, but I didn't notice him doing bad things.
He finished the game.
Yeah. Taylor on the other side. You know, talk about a guy who deserves a contract, right? Like, that's a guy you want to keep around. Like, that's a guy who could be your starting guard or your swing guard, your swing tackle. Like, he covers a lot of, right?
Matt Pryor.
I said Taylor. He has played himself into a contract. Yeah. So yeah, I do not see Nate Davis back with the Bears. I think we've seen the end.
Yeah.
Sunken cost.
I think the credit to the Bears is that we're talking about Nate Davis and we're talking about the sunk cost, but they don't seem to be caught up in the fact that it means anything more than you're not playing somebody who hasn't earned the playing time, and you're making a move for the good of the football team, and there are no other extracurricular reasons or things that are going on, nothing because you veteran status or anything that's nonsense. It's just moving on. They're moving on just the way they moved on from Velus Jones. They're moving on from Nate Davis. Sunk cost. They're willing to take those hits if they're PR hits, and I don't think they're PR hits. I think that they're probably a credit to the Bears, and that this is a meritocracy. You've got to play to keep your job, and if you don't, you'll lose it. And just look, because those are two examples of guys. One, a high draft pick, the first offensive player taken by Ryan Poles. The other one, an expensive free agent, has never earned his money. So you've got to play to perform. And Ryan Bates and Larry Borm coming back, that's good news for an offensive line that started its second game together. They were serviceable, not spectacular, but you didn't notice them being bad, and that's progress for the Bears. You never know with an offensive line how it gels and comes together. Now they have an off week to get more progress and reps together. We'll find out what direction they go. Credit to the secondary, though. This depth was ready. Josh Blackwell and Jalen Jones stepped up and replaced Kyler Gordon, Tyreek Stevenson, and Jaquan Brisker. And these guys in the secondary, that showed how much depth the Bears have at their strongest position. And when you have that kind of depth, you feel better about these kind of injuries and the guys coming back whenever they come back. Let's hope that they can be whole. But if they're not, the Bears are ready because they have a pretty good roster and it's deep.
I've answered this question, you know, a lot, obviously.
That is the voice of the young Blackhawk. Yes, indeed. Connor Bedard, how about the surprising Blackhawks? Did you really think they'd be 1-1-1 with a victory over the defending Western Conference champion Edmonton Oilers out in Edmonton after just three games? How have the Hawks started out so well?
Very quietly, the Hawks made some noise this weekend. I know people probably didn't watch it because they couldn't find it, or they were just sleeping or out on the town, because Friday night they were in Winnipeg. They blew a 1-0 lead in the final minute. They ended up getting a point but losing in overtime. Good showing, though, against the Jets. They played competitive against a good team on the road, and then they come back-to-back nights, and they beat Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. They did it with a shift in the top line. Nick Foligno joined Bedard and Teuvo Teravainen, and Teuvo and Bedard got off. They were really strong. They're dynamic. Teuvo Teravainen's a great signing. Peter Mrazek was good on when he needed to be. Soderblom had a nice night on Friday. And so you look at their goaltending was strong. Their defense has been improved. And these veterans have got the Hawks off to a pretty good start. 1-1-1 for the first three games is encouraging. It's not a team that's overmatched, and it all starts with Bedard, but it doesn't stop there. So this is a pretty fun team to watch right now.
Well, I would tell you that I was actually checking in on this game because I had considered betting on the Oilers on Saturday night. Oilers were minus 357, meaning you had to bet $357 on the Oilers to win 100. Okay, they were a huge, huge favorite. So I am glad that I did not pull the trigger and hit accept those terms. So good. That's great. I just wish I'm just disappointed as a fan. Like four games out west, that doesn't seem super fair.
Yeah, you know, you'd like to have them at home. You'd like to be able to see them a little bit. You'd like more coverage, frankly. That's probably our fault as much as anything else. But you know, I did not see the Edmonton victory coming at all. And that is a good team, and that is a team that a lot of people have high aspirations for. It was pretty amazing, frankly, that they managed to get that done. It was good to see first goal of the year for Connor Bedard. It was good to see another three-point game for Bedard in his career. That is a great thing for a young man to have. Tavo scored twice in that game. They won 5-2 at Edmonton. That blew my mind. I did not expect that one. Didn't see it coming. You know, I thought that the Hawks were in a little bit of trouble because they gave up, you know, this felt like they were giving up five goals a game in the preseason, and I was worried about how they were going to be able to win after even the first game. But to get to overtime in the second game and then finally get it done in the third game of the year. That was good. It was good to see, and they've got a good young team. And let's hope that they continue to build some momentum so when they get home, we can enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
Okay, that's the voice of Billy Donovan. Do you believe in Julian Phillips after he scored 21 Saturday in the Bulls preseason home opener? How concerned are you about Bezelis, 1-for-9 shooting? Can you name your top four subs if your starters are Kobe, Zach, Patrick Williams of the Vooch, and Giddy?
Yeah, I can do that fairly easily. I think Io's got a place in the rotation. I think Jalen Smith is going to be a part of it. I think Torrey Craig's three-point shooting makes him a guy that I would keep an eye on. Now, the problem here is I think you got to say Lonzo. Lonzo was on a podcast. I don't know that I'm going to count him, though, but he was on a podcast saying that they're just going to play him at the end of the year, at the end of the preseason, and then he'll be ready to go at the start of the year. We know he's on a minutes limit. We know that he can't go back-to-back games. So I will say Bouzelis, I'll throw him in there too. And I think it's because they drafted him as high as they did that he's a very young player. We saw him play very well in the first game. We saw him play less spectacularly, and the 1-for-9 shooting is obviously not ideal, but I think that's what you get with young guys. I think you're looking at that sort of thing. I think, you know, Julian Phillips, I don't have a problem with him. I'm not sure where he fits and how they're going to do it. I'm not sure that Billy is expanding everything he's doing. So, to me, Julian Phillips, Jalen, it's all kind of one guy. You know, like it's like one of these guys is going to probably separate himself.
Like three guys.
I know who they are. I'm just saying, I don't think they got spots in the rotation for all of them. So one of them is going to start playing better than the others, and he'll be in the mix. Bad idea? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about believing in Julian Phillips, but it's a good night. I mean, that's what you want. I get Bezelis, you know, 1-for-9. He's got to get used to the United Center. How many times has he been able to shoot there so far? I'm guessing not many. So it is a little different. Every building's a little different on the whole depth perception type of thing. You know, Io, of course. But, you know, I'm really I want to see ball. That's what I want to see. I want to see that guy out there. I want to see what he's got. Enough already. Like, let's go. I don't understand the teasing and the delay of the whole thing. Put that guy out there and let us, see what he can or cannot do.
Saturday was fun. The Memphis Grizzlies had Scottie Pippen Jr. He scored 11 points back in the United Center. Scottie Pippen Jr. With 11 for the Grizzlies. Zach Edey, he scored 15 points. Is he going to start for them? Wow. So, as for the Bulls, Julian Phillips, Dalen Terry, and Montez Bezelis may be fighting for that final rotational spot. I don't know if one of them stands out over the others. I would probably lean toward Bezelis, but also he had a conversation with Billy Donovan where he told him that he would be okay with going to the G League. Billy Donovan appreciated that, but I don't know if that's the direction they're headed. He can be streaky, and that's going to be the product of being a rookie, but you also have him and Dalen Terry and Julian Phillips. Which one of those three guys is most consistent? Phillips looked good. 5 of 8 for three-point range. That'll keep you on the floor if you can hit from three. But they have a lot of guys who don't really know where they fit in. Talen Horton-Tucker had 16 points. Where does he fit in? Is he on the team? I don't know about your gimmies in the rotation are Io, Torrey Craig, Jalen Smith. Because of what you paid Jalen Smith in free agency, haven't seen much of him. Very curious. After that, 9 to 10 deep. I mean, if he goes 10 in rotation, it's a little bit easier. So this will work itself out. You'll have injuries. I'm not that curious about Lonzo Ball, Dustin. I think that I will be happy when he gets on the court, when he makes a ceremonial return. I am counting on him for nothing. I don't think that is mean. I just think that's realistic. I don't count on him for anything this year. I hope that he has a medical breakthrough and is written about and celebrated. But I just don't think from a point guard standpoint and a backup standpoint, you can count on him for much of anything.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Now that baseball is down to a final four, have you amended your predictions? What's the most memorable highlight from a weekend of playoff baseball?
Well, yeah, I've got to amend my prediction of pick the Phillies. So that's dead. Yankees and Dodgers, give me that. The Dodgers, 33 straight innings of scoreless baseball. Oh, my goodness. Forget about who's starting for them. Their bullpen has been lights out. That's how they dispatched the Padres late Friday night. How about the Guardians getting a grand slam Saturday? They played the game at noon because they had to with weather. I just think that that might have been the biggest highlight, but the Dodgers doing what they're doing and then the hug that Jack Flaherty had with his mom back in Southern California, that was pretty cool after last night's win by the Dodgers over the Mets to begin the NLCS. Lot of good moments. I'm amending my prediction because I have to. Yankees and Dodgers will figure out who wins that when it happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yankees, Dodgers, that's what I think is going to happen. That's what I'm cheering for. But the grand slam Saturday afternoon in Cleveland for the Guardians, that, you know, against the ace for the Tigers, that was kind of the highlight of the weekend for me.
Yeah, it wasn't a highlight for me. I was cheering for for Detroit, and it was a drag when they were eliminated. I think that was as bad as seeing the Padres eliminated. I had the Padres.
Lane Thomas hit the grand slam.
Yeah, so I just it wasn't a happy weekend in my baseball world. That doesn't matter who you want to take. I'm going to take the Dodgers over the Yankees. You know. Anything but the Mets-Yankees. I don't want that at all. I would prefer the Mets to get through than the Yankees. Would I? I don't know. I don't like the Guardians. I think I like the Yankees. So I'll go with what I had been hoping for, which is Ohtani returning to the mound to strike out Soto and Judge. What do you think?
How about Kopech?
Kopech can strike out someone before and then,
That would be cool.
Yeah, he's, Kopech's pitching really well for himself. It's kind of amazing. I know he had that immaculate inning, but boy, they kind of hit a wall with him, and you knew he was going to be good, but it's just a pity they didn't get any proper major league players out of that deal.
Great argument for change of scenery.
Yeah, no question. If a great argument for anybody looking for pitching help to come to the White Sox. Seems to work out.
A lot of people do that.
We got to get to the extra point. That's next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Go Brew Crew.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
After Caleb Williams threw four TDs, cracked the 100 on his passer rating for the third time this year, what stood out against the Jaguars? And can you pinpoint one or two things that have been different in the last three games from the first three when he was less effective?
Well, yes, he has been more efficient and yesterday a little bit more explosive, so that's progress, obviously. You look at what has changed since the Colts game. To me, it's fairly obvious. The Bears are asking him to throw less, and you're getting more out of the quarterback position. Shane Waldron has made an adjustment, and Caleb Williams has taken advantage of that. When you look at the last three games, all of which have come and finished with a 100 or more passer rating, 106.6, 126.2, and yesterday 124.4, he's had 23, 29, and 29 pass attempts. That's how you make progress. You take care of the football, and you are playing off the running game and using the run to set up the pass. That's as elementary as any football lesson you're ever going to learn. What he did yesterday to me was important was he did not let a bad throw, a bad moment define his day. He overcame it because he's got confidence in himself, he's got confidence in his teammates, and they have confidence in him. The underthrown ball that would have been a touchdown to DJ Moore was a bad throw. He floated it, but even the best quarterbacks make bad throws like that during a game. You look at around the league, it happens. It's not necessarily that it happens. It's how you handle what happens next. And Caleb Williams did not let that faze him. So I think that they're running the ball more. They're calling fewer pass plays, which, you know, that Colts game was a point in the season which was a pivot point. There's going to be a before and after. 52 passes, 60 called passes, too many. So you see that being reduced. You see him taking advantage of the opportunities. Keenan Allen coming back helps because it gives him a little bit of a safety net. And Shane Waldron, I think, is calling a more intelligent game plan.
I think it's been his legs. I think that's the difference. He has not been afraid to take off and run and take what the defense is giving him. Now, a couple times yesterday, there was a couple hits that I didn't like. Took a little bit more physicality than you would hope for. But I think it's his ability, and not ability, I think he always had the ability. His willingness to take what's there has been the difference the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I thought that his mobility and his getting on the move, I thought that was excellent yesterday. I did acknowledge you, buddy. I thought of you when he did take off, that you were talking about that. He ended up having a good day, doing a really good job for himself running the football. He had a career high in runs. He wound up with whatever it was. He broke runs of 23 and 19 yards, career high 56 yards rushing. That is a really important statistic, because the one he was like, he got past the 50 and he was like, okay, I'm happy here. And he went down, and then later on, with the second run, he really wanted to get to the end zone. He had a nose for the end zone to get down to the 2 yard line, whatever it was. Really fought hard to get into the end zone on that one. So congratulations to him. I thought he had a great game. I thought that part of it was his mobility and the ability to take. Did you see Joe Burrow last night? Joe Burrow at one point, the first touchdown of the game, he realizes that everybody is loaded left and the right side of the field is wide open, tucks the ball and just does, like, it was like a 50-yard run.
47-yard touchdown.
To the pylon, yeah. And dove for the pylon.
Yeah.
And, you know, when that's there, you got to take it, regardless of who you are. So I thought that Caleb was totally in charge. It felt like it just felt different than it's been, and you're absolutely right. He did get that passer rating up, I got to tell you, that is an extraordinary thing, because when you throw a pick, you're usually punished, but it tells you, what was he, 79% accuracy? That's pretty awesome. And then, obviously, being able to throw four touchdowns. We get caught up sometimes with how many yards a guy throws for. He threw for more than enough yards. He did more than
226
enough.
226 will do it.
226.
That's a good number.
With four touchdowns and a pick. You take that and take you run like a
every
thief
week.
In the night.
You take that every week. And I think what you do is you see the emergence of a quarterback that no longer or you can envision being not the question. Strength more than weakness.
Yeah. I mean, listen, hey, it's going to be fun. Because their next game is against the Commanders. You got to see what that – we're going to have this conversation about the rookie quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. That's going to be fun. And I do believe that if Jaden Daniels wasn't doing what he's doing, everybody would be marveling at what's going on with Caleb Williams, how he's improved.
No doubt about it. Jaden Daniels lost to the Ravens yesterday, but he had a solid game.
Yeah.
Maybe not as spectacular, but they are 4-2, I believe, as well. So you have 2-4-2 teams with playoff aspirations meeting in a couple weeks. That's going to be a fun game.
312-644-6767. What's your take? What's your take on the Bears? Are we celebrating it too much? We tried to be cautious with one of our questions just so we could celebrate it more. And we're going to do so this morning. 312-644-6767. Mullion Haw on the score.
That was it right there. That was it. But hey, we're going to get better. We're going to get better. We have to get better. Hey, I'm telling you, listen, I don't know if this is fact or not, but the first NFL player ever, back-to-back touchdowns and back-to-back snaps. I'm telling you. Here we go. All right, boys, bring it up. Hell of a trip there. We'll have to get Victory Monday figured out here. Here we go. Family on three. 1, 2, 3. Family.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. How about a game ball there?
How about it?
For the tight end long snapper. Very funny moment, apparently, on the sidelines where he's the backup long snapper. You know, gulp, imagine that. And they came up to him and said, hey, Scott's hurt, and he's out. And he said, Tyler Scott.
What's that got to do with me? He's like, what does that have to do with me? Tyler Scott's out? Oh.
He thought the receiver
Scott
got
Daly.
Hurt. No,
yeah.
The long snapper.
So Cole Kmet, 3 snaps per week on Thursdays.
Yeah.
That's what he takes.
Yeah.
But he told the story post-game about growing up and his father, Frank, saying to him, basically, you want to find something to make yourself indispensable, develop a second skill or talent. That is how you may make the team. If you're the 53rd or 54th guy, you can be an extra long snapper. It's sensible. I don't think he ever thought he would be in that situation he was in yesterday. We now need a Bears historian. Maybe Larry Mayer could do this. Has there ever been somebody who has done what Cole Kmet did yesterday twice? Score a touchdown and then turn around and snap the extra point.
Yeah.
Back in the day, there had to be some people who did some double duty, right?
Well, I mean,
way back.
I got to tell you, it is really difficult to imagine there isn't. How about this one? I'll give you an example of that, and we'll get to the phone lines. So back in 1941, in the fifth round of the NFL draft, the Bears drafted Charles O'Rourke out of Boston College, and he played behind Sid Luckman, and he had a limited playing time. And in his rookie season, he managed 37 of 88 passes for 951 yards with 11 touchdowns. The 11 touchdowns, he also had 16 interceptions. The 11 touchdowns stands as a Bears rookie record. Caleb Williams now has 9, so he's going to hopefully break that very soon. He also played defense. you can't even imagine.
So
what
was he a long snapper?
Like. He was a punter, so he intercepted 3 passes on defense. He returned 2 punts, and he punted 23 times for 817 yards for the 11-0 Bears. Those guys did everything. He was unfortunately the punter, not the snapper. But he was a quarterback, he was a defensive back, and he was a punter and a punt returner in the 1941 season when the Bears finished 11-0.
That's versatility.
Then he went into the Navy.
Yeah.
Wound up playing in California afterward and then later with the Colts.
That's good versatility.
It's insane. It's insane.
So maybe somebody else did what Cole Kmet did, but it's safe to say that maybe, as Matt Eberflus said, the only guy who's ever done it, they can celebrate that because they are daring anybody to prove them different, prove them wrong. Probably can't do it.
So what is there something else that I'm missing here? What am I missing?
So I put in the chat, it has happened before. It looked like a player from the Eagles did it in 2005 that scored a touchdown and then snapped an extra point.
Well, okay. That kind of ruins everything.
That kind of deflates
you. Sorry to ruin your whole
I was going to say that there are a
Mike
lot
Bartram
of...
Mike Bartram in 2005.
There you go.
All right.
That's not Eagles. That long ago. That's hardly 1941.
But Flew said it was the only guy, maybe in Bears history.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe someone got to go to work. Flew said,
get up, Larry Mayer.
Yeah.
Start researching.
Are you going to be the guy to go up there and tell Flew you were wrong? All right. We got to get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Jeff. Jeff's listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Victory Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Two things. On the premises, there should be some baked goods for you guys from me to celebrate. So hopefully you get those today.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Thanks, Jeff.
Things I'm excited about so far. The defense is getting to the quarterback this year, holding opponents under 20 points, and they are creating turnovers. The offense is scoring points in the red zone and having sustained drives. The quarterback in general is hitting tight windows, and I think the two best passes yesterday were both touchdown passes to Keenan Allen to show that.
Yes.
But I can't unsee that throw on the long pass to DJ Moore, so I'm still waiting to see the long pass that actually gets to somebody. Hopefully that's coming. You guys kind of touched on this earlier. I'm kind of optimistic, but with perspective. We played the number 30, 32, and 31 defenses the last 3 weeks of the year, our last 3 weeks of this winning streak. But you got to win who's out in front of you, and what they're doing is winning easily, so that's good to see. I think we need to go at least 6-3 going into the game against the Packers. They got two road games coming up, so I want to see them win a road game, an actual road game. I think it's a good chance if they can get to 6-3, if they get to 7-2, they got a gauntlet that's coming up that's probably the toughest schedule in the NFL when I look at it right now. To make the playoffs is going to be tough, so I think 6-3 is a must when they get after that ninth game.
Second half of the season's tough, no doubt about it.
No
great
question.
Call, Jeff.
Great stuff, Jeff.
Good
thank
points.
You. And let's get on it, fellas.
Figure out baked goods are.
I told Dustin.
All right, just relax.
If we've got baked goods,
we'll figure it out.
Find them in this building.
Jeff's point about the second half of the schedule. Yesterday, if you're watching the NFL Network, after the game, they had some really nice things to say in the studio about the Bears.
Yeah.
Steve Mariucci, though, looked at the schedule, and he said, I was counting L's and W's last night, and he said he had a lot of L's in the second half of the season just because of the strength of the schedule. You know, when you look at Packers, Vikings, Lions, Niners.
Let me ask you a question.
And then they've got to play the division again, and it's the best division in football. Enjoy this now.
Let me ask you a question.
Get better for then.
Two games against the Lions, are they the same entity they were before losing Aiden Hutchinson?
We'll have to get into that because that is a very
bad injury,
terrible story for the league and the Lions, and it does change things in the NFC North slightly.
Yeah, we'll see how those teams look when you actually face them. All right, we got to take a quick time out. We'll bring in Olin Krutz next. Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.